Dr. Banks, if the vaccines were totally clean, they didn't have anything else but whatever was supposed, does the whole paradigm even float?
Well, the question is, do viruses even exist?
Oh, well, yeah, I know you're going to get to that with the AIDS thing. Yeah,
you have to go. You know, you have to go again. You have to go back to what is the cell? Do they know anything about what they're looking at? And what are they calling viruses? And are viruses really, you know? And this is how I what I found, because I've looked at, so what viruses have I looked at? I've looked at the HIV virus. I've looked at the HPV virus. I've looked at the polio virus. And when I looked at those viruses, what I discovered that they never isolated anything. And so what they do is they find particular pieces of genetic material that seem to be more prevalent in these diseases, but they never really isolate them because they can't. And so, for example, with the HIV virus, all of the proteins that they're saying are HIV proteins are actually human proteins.
So when you say they can't isolate it, we've had people on the show a couple times over the years suggest that, but I never did quite understand it. So the actual virus that the medical model's trying to kill or something doesn't really exist?
Well, how can you kill something that's part of you?
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
So you have to, for example, we don't need vaccines. Because almost all of the diseases that they claim the vaccines are helping to prevent were almost out of existence before the vaccines came into widespread use. And so what made people healthier? Again, nutrition, sanitation, housing, education, those are the things that people need in order to strengthen their immune systems to be able to stay healthy. And those are the things that were happening in the Europe and the United States. And so it's an absurd kind of idea for somebody like Bill Gates to be going to Africa, not offering clean water, but offering vaccines.
Yeah.
It's actually genocide. That is genocide. And so we know that. So when they started talking about viruses, it was certainly before the electron microscope, before they could identify it. And viruses actually originally meant a toxin or a poison, because they didn't know what it was. And because they had the bacterial idea, the idea of the bacteria causing diseases, and then they had these other diseases, you couldn't find bacteria, they said it must be something smaller. It must be a virus. But once they had the electron microscopes, they were able to see these particles. And so they defined the particles as viruses. But it, again, if you know anything about the cell cycle, that the cell gets rid of DNA and RNA, which is damaged. It packages them into little bundles and it extrudes them from the cell. So when the cell is oxidized or damaged, it can get rid of these particles, and these particles under the microscope actually look like what they call viral particles.
So the idea that we heard in the 50s when I was a kid getting a polio shot, that there's this virus that's running around the world and it's called polio, and you need a vaccine to protect yourself because you might catch this virus. That's just not true.
Well, what was happening in the 50s? That, you know, they were beginning to use DDT, which is a toxin, a neurotoxin.
Uh-huh.
And they were beginning to, you know, they were also beginning to have all of these nuclear tests in the environment. So they were beginning to really, that was the beginning of really heavy-duty toxins in the environment. Remember, the polio was just in the summertime, so it didn't seem to happen. It happened when kids went outside.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, people were using a lot of sugar drinks. One of the doctors in the South discovered if he made his kids drink, you know, water and not sugar drinks, they seemed to be much better protected. And so there were a lot of things happening in the 50s. And so that polio, I call it a psychological operation, and it worked.
So when people have been dying over the last, 20, 30 years with this HIV thing and all this in Africa, can you explain to us what's really going on?
Well, first of all, remember the 70s after the Vietnam War, the drugs came back in.
That's when the AIDS thing started, right? Late 70s.
It was the free sex and the homosexual community was doing an enormous amount of drugs. They were like using whatever drug was on the market, Quaaludes, LSD, amyl nitrate.
Yes.
These nitrates are very carcinogenic. And so, and they were having multiple partners. They were having a lot of problems because they were interjecting. If you have anal sex, you're having a lot of organisms into your blood system. And so they were actually damaging their electromagnetic and immune systems by their behavior. It was a subset of gay people in the United States. And of course, there were drugs in the United States, heroin and crack, both of which we've known for, especially with opium, we've known for 100 years that it can cause AIDS-like symptoms. And so when the people started dying, showing up in the emergency room, they first said, okay, maybe it was the lifestyle and the drugs, but they immediately, the CDC, who loves anything to be an infection, discounted it and said, oh, it's a virus. And so the race was on to find whatever this viral cause of the disease was. And this very investigator who had his integrity is challenged, Robert Gallo, here in the United States, and Luc Montagnier in Paris were the ones who supposedly wrote these papers. Well, when you read the papers, you realize, and I'm one of the few people who seem to have read all of their papers, they never isolated anything. What they did is they found an enzyme, and because they found this enzyme, they said it must be because there is a virus there. And so because they found this enzyme, they said that they had isolated a virus, and that was what they did. And then they used some genetic markers. They used some, which you cannot do, because in order to say that you have a virus, you have to be able to have the DNA of the virus or the RNA of the virus in order to use it as a template to replicate it. But they used used a non-specific template to replicate, but you can't do that. But that's what they did. And they sold it to the world. And then in Africa, you'll remember that was the fall of apartheid in South Africa. And so one of the things that happened in South Africa is that pulmonary tuberculosis was never part of the HIV AIDS thing until the fall of apartheid. Why was that important? Because a lot of these workers who worked in the diamond and the gold mines were exposed to things like asbestos, and they developed pulmonary tuberculosis, which was widespread, especially when the guys went back to their homes on, break. And so pulmonary tuberculosis became an AIDS disease. So they were now saying that a lung disease that these guys got in the mine was a sexually transmitted disease. Why? Because then the people who owned those mines would have to pay workmen's compensation, because under apartheid, they didn't have to pay any money to these people. But once apartheid fell, they would have to pay workmen's compensation to these people. And that would be a big blow to the diamond and gold mines in South Africa. And of course, the poverty issues in South Africa, the nutritional issues and the lack of nutrients and the lack of clean water and the poverty because of, the wars, the created wars and the people being displaced in their land. So all of that was, so the cover story for this economic catastrophe was AIDS, and the cover story for the drug catastrophe in the United States was AIDS.
Wow, that's quite a tale there. We had heard years.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing that happened with pellagra. in the early part, in this is the same eugenics people with pellagra. Pellagra is a vitamin B deficiency, and it was very common in the South, and it has almost all the same symptoms of AIDS. You know, the immune system, people had skin problems, they lost weight, they had all kinds of infections, and the eugenicists in New York tried to say that it was just because these were poor, trashy people in the South. But the reason was is because the South, they were not paying living wages, and the people were eating what they called a yellow diet. They were eating probably what they called fat back and cornmeal. That was mostly their diet. And as a result, they were nutritionally deficient, and they were dying like flies of pellagra. And a New York doctor went to the South, and he discovered that the people who worked in these hospitals and these other places, the doctors and the nurses who were eating well never got sick, so it couldn't have been an infectious problem. And he looked at the diets, and he discovered it was a diet kind of problem. But the eugenicists for years and years and years tried to suppress the information. And they did until the Great Depression, when the government started giving out food to a lot of people because everybody was getting poor now. And so they were worried about their workforce. And so we began to see slowly that pellagra went away and that it was a nutritional problem and it wasn't an infectious problem, as the eugenicists said.
Is there any truth to the stories that came out, I guess, around 85, that in the gay communities in New Orleans, Los Angeles, and New York, that something was put into the hepatitis virus or vaccine for them?
It wasn't put into the hepatitis vaccine. The problem with the hepatitis vaccine is that they were taking serum from the sickest people on the planet to make that vaccine. It was a terrible vaccine. And it wasn't necessary because, again, hepatitis is an inflammatory process of the liver, which is caused, again, by toxins. And so giving somebody this vaccine, which was from the sickest people on the planet, was just an insane kind of thing to do.
And they gave it to a lot of the nurses and nurse practitioners in the hospitals, didn't they?
Yeah.
I knew some of them, in New Orleans when I lived there. So today in 2018, if someone is intimate with somebody that has, is it possible that they have some kind of a, I don't know, I don't even know what to say now.
HIV is not a sexually transmitted disease. First of all, it doesn't exist. It's not sexually transmitted. Anyway, if you read the literature, they never said it's sexually transmitted. It's anally, it happens not because it's transmitted sexually, it's because of the breakdown of the mucous membranes and the bacteria from the colon getting into the bloodstream.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. From a physiological sense, a little I know, that kind of is logical.
So the studies, all of the studies that show that, talked about the, for example, they looked at groups of prostitutes. So you think prostitutes would be, some of the biggest people who have HIV. But the prostitutes who, so they looked at Russia, St. Petersburg versus Moscow. And I think in Moscow, and I may have this backwards, in St. Petersburg, where the girls had pimps and they were clean, they weren't taking drugs, nobody was getting AIDS. And in Moscow, where they were working on the streets and they were taking drugs, they were getting AIDS.
Wow. Is it possible that this whole AIDS thing, it could be that untrue? No.
It is that untrue. I've written 12 books about it.
I know.
So a lot of other people have written a lot of books about it.
There have been
very sober mainstream scientists from the very beginning who have been talking about this. And they even, I wasn't one of the people, but I do know several of the people who met with Thabo and Becky. And that's when the new in South Africa, when he was president, to try, because Thabo Mbeki said something is wrong here, and I want to listen to both sides of the argument. So he invited the people who believe, who wanted to push the AIDS idea, and the people who said this is crazy. He invited both sides to South Africa, and that's when the New York Times started calling him crazy, and Clinton administration started sending people, envoys, to, you know, because they wanted to push this idea on Africa, because it was part of, it's part of the suppression of the economics, the psychology, and the development of the African continent. And this goes all the way back to Henry Kissinger's National Security Memo 200. But they started calling Thabo Mbeki crazy and saying he, you know, he was killing his own people, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And but because he wanted to find out what was really going on. But from the very beginning, there have been hundreds of, if not thousands, of doctors and scientists who've been trying to say that this is, you know, the whole HIV paradigm is nonsense. But, you know, once these guys get hold of something and they want it to be one way, it's going to be that way, because they have the control of the media.
Which is, I guess, has been done with cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been done with every disease that there is. And every time, for example, I think recently I read that the FDA has trying to suppress homeopathic remedies.
Yes, they're working on it.
And so the next thing they're, and the other thing that they do, you know, one of the things I wrote about is how, like, cherry farmers were saying, you know, cherries were anti-inflammatory, but then they were warned by the FDA that they couldn't say that cherries are anti-inflammatory, because if you make any kind of claim, then you have to be, I mean, this is how crazy it is, you have to be a medicine, and cherries, of course, are not a medicine. And you have to do the, in order to make those kind of claims, you have to do the research, which of course costs millions of dollars.
Yeah, we've heard some pretty terrible stories about this whole UN thing, and what's that big movement? What is that called?
Codex Alimentarius.
Yeah, Codex Alimentarius and all that. So there's definitely a move on by, I guess the best term is globalist, to keep this agenda moving forward. So this, it seems to me then all this whole autoimmune paradigm thing, and it's all just not true either, really, is it?
Well, at the beginning I said, you know, when everything Americans believe.
You're just making my head explode here, Doc, I tell you. But it's okay. I like it. Okay.
No, but this, look, we're in a wonderful, wonderful age right now. It's horrible. It's wonderful. It's horrible, yeah, because there are so many evil things happening, but it's wonderful because we have access to information in ways we never had before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, too many people use the internet as just a means of social interaction. And one of the things that has happened that I feel terrible about is that, you know, I was able to write two books using Google and some other search tools. Google has begun to suppress so much information because people have begun to, you know, once people started looking at the information that was important, they began to suppress it. And that's beginning to happen. So the level of information, they're trying to constrict it. But I think that there are too many people who are asking too many questions now, and there are too many children, too many people who have sick children, too many people who are addicted to opioid drugs, too many adults who are getting things like diabetes and cancer. And so we have and then of course these shootings. Almost every one of these shootings, these young people have been on some kind of psychotropic drug.
I believe you're correct there. But the HIPAA thing is, nobody can talk about it, or you can't go in there and look, can you?
Well, it's been a lot of it's been written about in the press, not the mainstream media, but certainly sure. online.
Sure. Yeah.
And so the information is there. So I think that some people who are questioning, I think once you have a damaged child, that unfortunately, Carolyn Mace says you can learn by wisdom or you can learn by woe, and unfortunately, most of us are learning by woe.
Yeah, Dr. Banks, so, do you think that the autism vaccine thing, just kind of pinning it to that, has been in some way unknowingly a bit of a maybe a detriment to this movement to finding out the truth about autism? Or in other words, by tying it so much to the vaccines, then it gets to be about the anti-vaxxers and the vaxxers, you know?
Well, in a way, I question everything, and I'm questioning the whole idea of viruses to begin with. So if viruses are not an issue, why do you need vaccines at all?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm tired of being constricted by these idiotic paradigms that we're not asking the right questions. We need to break out of these paradigms and we're going to solve these problems. So vaxxers, anti-vaxxers, let them argue. I want to talk to people who want to ask whether viruses really exist. And that's the question, that's the discussion that I want to have. But the issue is, they knew this was going to happen. Because how do you set up a crisis? Well, the first thing you do is you give the pharmaceutical industry a free ride. So you give them, you pass a law to hold them harmless for their vaccines. So that was done during the Reagan administration.
Yes.
They set up this vaccine court.
Yeah.
And so, hey, that was like, oh, whoop-de-doo, here we go. And so at that time, you know, before that vaccine law was passed, there, when I was in medical school, the rate of autism was about 1 in 10,000. Now it's about 1 in 50. We're talking about 30, 35 years.
My goodness, 1 in 50.
All right. So we're talking about 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50 in less than 50 years. So those are the numbers you have to look at. Those are serious, serious numbers. So there's a really big problem. If you have you have a problem that goes from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50 in less than 50 years.
And you're going to be speaking at a big autism conference in Chicago and talking to them about the idea that there is no such thing as a virus?
No, I'm actually going to be talking about transhumanism, genocide, transhumanism. You know what? You know how vaccines fit into this future picture that is being developed by this global community who wants to limit the number of people on the face of the planet, but they also want to make money off of them while they're doing it. They, you know, while they're harvesting, you know, it's like they're harvesting us, and they're making money while they're doing it.
John is in Seattle. He says, I'm enjoying the show. So is the doctor saying that there's no such thing as even a cold virus or a flu virus?
What I'm saying is that your cells will respond in a particular way when they are under stress, when they are not getting enough energy, when they don't have nutrients, and different cells respond in different ways.
And so how does that work with a flu or a cold virus, quote, in quotes?
Well, first of all, the flu, for example, every year they have, they so-called have this flu vaccine,
right.
And they claim that they, you know, they make this vaccine a year before the outbreak. And so the flu vaccines that they make, they claim only have about a 15 to 20% likelihood of actually even matching what's going to come in the year before. So what are they doing? What, you know, what's in that vaccine? What are they identifying? And so what I'm saying is that when your cells are under stress, the cells actually are getting rid of particulates of DNA and RNA. The cell wraps them in a membrane and extrudes them. These particular particulates actually look like what they're calling viruses. but it's your cell simply cleansing itself of toxic substances. That they call viruses.
So it would be a mostly colds and flus are just a detoxification.
A detoxification process. You know, it's like they're oxidized. You know, like when copper, you put copper outside and it turns green, it becomes oxidized.
Right.
And so when your molecules are oxidized, when certain molecules are oxidized, they're extruded from the cell.
And they get oxidized because?
Because, again, there's not enough energy, to be able to reduce the oxygen molecules.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email.
There's two processes, reduction and oxidation. Reduction is, it gives you extra electrons. Oxidation is removing your electrons. And so what you want to do is you have to have a balance between those two processes. And remember, a lot of people talk about oxidative stress. So what we're looking at is a particular set of cells that are under oxidative stress.
Here's an email from Ellen. When the two types of single-cell organisms originally combined to form the eukaryotic cell, was the part that became the present mitochondria the part that was originally from the low-oxygen environment or the higher-oxygen environment?
And most of what happened, though, the mitochondria, most of the DNA from the mitochondria was transferred to the central genome. So only about the mitochondria reproduces itself, but it still sends messages to the central genome where most of its DNA was transferred.
Over the last few years, this whole 23andMe thing has become popular, where you do the swab and you look at genetic SNPs and all that. You think there's any value in this kind of technology?
I'm amazed at how gullible people are. The only thing that is for is to collect, to have a DNA database. We're in an electronic prison right now, and they have all this information on everybody. And part of that is if you told people, look, we want to collect DNA because we want a DNA database on the whole population, people would resist it. But if they say, oh, look at your ancestry, you know, it's just like Facebook. If they said, look, we want to know what you're thinking, who your friends are, where you're going, what you do, you know, people would go like, hey, the government is spying on me. But you go like, oh, Facebook, I can connect with my friends.
I can't tell you how many emails, though, I've had over the years, five maybe, of people that are really just all concerned and sick because they got the 23andMe and they're poor methylators and they can't methylate. That's what it says.
Yeah, but the thing of it is that what does that mean? What does that mean? I mean, do they have a problem that they're looking to solve, or are they just looking for a problem that can't be resolved? I mean,
They didn't have a problem, with all due respect to them, until they saw the thing that they had a problem.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying, because that information is irrelevant. And why is it irrelevant? It's irrelevant because the geneticists, again, are trying to say that your genes control your cell. But your genes don't control the cell. The energetic information inputs in the cytoplasm control the genetic outputs. And so even if you may be a poor methylator, if you're getting the right nutrients and you're getting rid of the toxins that you need to, it doesn't really matter, because you're going to be able to have a balanced system, which is in a good state of homeostasis.
Okay, let me repeat that. So the genes do not control the cells, as people are being taught, right, with this whole 23andMe. And then what controls the cells?
The inputs that go into the cell, the cytoplasm, and our food, the nutrient intake, these are the things that control the cell.
The cells.
This is, now they're calling it epigenetics.
Right. Right.
You know, but the point of it is that the if the genes don't get information, Information, remember, information is electromagnetic. If the genes do not receive this information, they're just going to sit there. It's like the processor on your computer. If you don't put anything in, you don't get anything out.
So even the Jappy genetics, I think they're taken into a way that's, I don't know, much more complicated than I think it is. It seems to me that when you worry about stuff, you're going to get sick. It's epigenetics.
Yeah, but that's part of the energetic inputs.
Of course, that's the energetic inputs into the cell,
that's
right?
That's the energetic inputs, and so what is important is that your genes have an enormous amount of information, and what is that information? The information is that they need to make particular proteins, and how do they make the proteins? Okay, they get information. They say, the cell says, I need this particular protein. So this particular part of the gene becomes activated. But this is the crucial thing. This is another word I'm going to throw out. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's called bijective.
Bijective?
But what this means,
bijective.
Okay. So, but what this means is this. One particular symptom can be caused by one part of the genome, or you can have many parts of the genome that also can contribute to one symptom. So it's not a one-to-one process that the gene is going to simply, you can like snip out a piece of gene and you can read it and it's going to give you exact information. It's much more complicated than that, because even the gene that is told to be produced at that time, once it goes through some other processes and information processes, the protein it makes may not even be the protein that was coded for. It's a much more complicated process than they make it seem.
Sure.
And
sure.
So all of this information that they're giving out to people, that you can get this information and that information, it's just, they're selling a product and they're also collecting data.
Well, as you know, the natural alternative, if you will, community, we've all gone down a lot of black holes in the last 30 years, haven't we? And and we have. Patrick, thanks for this wonderful guest. We need lots of MDs practicing what Dr. Banks is talking about. Have you heard about the idea that, one, she mentioned Anthony Williams, that talks about cancer, that it can't exist without a virus feeding on a toxin process that continues with the virus feeding on the toxin and eliminating this and feeds on again and again. I don't know.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
I don't know
about.
What they're talking about either. So there's somebody out there saying that cancer is a virus and, you know.
Yeah, again, I need people to get, this is the materialist thinking. If you want to stay in the materialist world, in the molecular biology world, then you can have these conversations. It's a dead-end conversation. I don't have these conversations. I've left the molecular biology world. I'm talking about energy medicine and energy dynamics. And if you want to stay in that molecular biology world, it's a dead-end street. I don't want to be there, and I don't talk about it. Not the viruses, the yeast, or none of that. I think it's just, if you understand why those things show up, it's not because they are the cause, it's because they are the effect. So what we're trying to find here is the cause, not the effect.
Hmm. Wow. Thumbs up for Dr. Banks, writes an emailer, genetics is eugenics, still headquartered at Cold Springs Harbor. Hmm. Rupert Sheldrake would agree with Dr. Banks that genes are a minor part of heredity and health.
I like Rupert Sheldrake. I think he has a lot of good things to say. I mean, he's asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm going to sneeze, but I try not to. How does that work with... Oh, thank you. How does that work with the cold and flu viruses? ? I know people who never get a cold or flu, they have more energy than the viruses. Oh, is that right? I guess... This emailer is onto something?
But, I'm sorry. Could you repeat that? Because I'm not sure what they're...
He says, this person is answering my question. How does that work with the cold and flu viruses? ? I know people who never get a cold or flu, they have more energy than the viruses. But you're saying the viruses don't even exist anyway.
They have more. They have enough energy. They have enough cellular energy to from prohibiting their cells from breaking down as a result of not having enough energy to maintain the structure of the cell.
So when the cells break down, you could have a symptom that's called the flu.
Right. You can have almost all the diseases are involved in what is called cells undergoing cell death, which is called apoptosis. Or if it's not a cell that replicates easily, like the nervous system, the cells become degenerative, like in Parkinson's disease. And so what we're talking about is we're talking about how the cells respond, what people have called viruses or infections are simply the cells responding the way that cells were genetically, historically known to respond to environmental stressors. These are evolutionary processes. If you understand, and so what I'm talking about is the evolutionary biology of the cells in our body. And if we understand the evolutionary biology of the cells in our body, then we can stop talking about all these other molecular things and we can start talking about process.
Does Dr. Banks have any thoughts on rectal ozone treatments?
No.
Okay. Joined in late, love it. Does Dr. Banks have any thoughts on extraterrestrial life out there? You seem to be brushing up against all topics today. I'll listen to the whole show later tonight.
I don't know what they mean by extraterrestrial
ETs, life. Like other than earthly beings.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we don't talk, look, no,
I understand. Don't worry, you don't have to respond to that.
I don't deal with
We have listeners all over the world, we don't know. Who's this, please, on the phone?
Hello, this is Robert. I'm calling to ask Dr. Banks a question.
Go ahead.
I won't ask about spiritual ghosts and stuff, Dr. Banks. are you there?
Yes, we are. Yes. Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. Yes, Dr. Banks, I was diagnosed with hepatitis C years ago, and I underwent that direct-acting antiviral treatment, Harvoni, and it seems like I haven't felt good since then. Can you comment on Hep C, what you think those medicines might have done?
The question is, why was your liver damaged? What did you do?
Well, they say it's from blood transfusion. I was an ex-IV drug user, had vaccines, all kind of health problems.
Okay, sure, so your liver was damaged
liver enzymes.
All right, hold on, Robert. All right, she's got it. Just
so
listen.
In other words, your liver was damaged because you had a lot of toxins.
All right.
That's what you're telling. I mean, because essentially the liver gets damaged, you know, because if you were an IV drug user or if you were a drinker or you were, for example, if you were someone, a worker who worked in a factory around, there are certain chemicals that can damage the liver. And so the issue for you would have been, how do you detoxify? So one of the ways you detoxify is getting rid of the things that are causing the toxicants to come into your body. So you have to detox, and then you also have to replace. And there were a lot of things that you could have used to replace the nutrients that you needed for your liver. And there's a lot of information about that. So unfortunately, the medications, the medications that they give for liver, what they're calling hepatitis, viral caused hepatitis, are themselves quite damaging. So what I would advise you to do, and there are lots of websites, lots of information on the internet you can get to find out some of the things that will help you actually to build up your liver.
To detoxify and then build the liver back.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
I hear you. Well, here's the thing that's kind of odd. I did all that detoxifying, everything under the sun, IVs, root canals out, heavy metal. but the liver enzymes were always still high a little bit, you know. But whenever I underwent that toxic medicine, you know, liver enzymes back to normal. So obviously there was some booger in there, or bugger, that they say, that was actually there, you know, not just toxicity.
But let me ask you something. Did it stay? And how? And why do you still feel not maximum?
Why don't I feel good, you said?
Yeah. So you're telling me when you got the drug, the liver enzymes came down,
right,
but you still don't feel well.
Well, my opinion is anything that you're going to take that's going to affect the virus. I mean, it's called a direct acting antiviral that goes in and destroys the DNA. It was supposed to be selective. Well, my opinion is, I think it did a little more messing around than just the virus. Mitochondria, possibly, or who knows. And then, like, there was a doctor.
Okay, well, that's a bit. Let's just kind of wrap it there. Can you want to say anything else, Dr. Banks? Because we can't. There's not much more we can do here. Is there?
No.
One last question
no.
for Dr. Banks, please.
Go ahead.
Dr. Banks, there was a Dr. Jennifer Daniels, you might have heard her. She said that when you take some of these medicines, whether it's Tylenol or anything, that stuff stays in your system, meaning, you know, there's residue and all that. You think when you take medicines like that, they actually come out in 48 hours, like they say, or is that stuff in you for good?
Well, it didn't. They tell you a half-life, and the half-life is how long it takes for most of the drug to get out of your system, but it takes a lot longer for the rest of it to get out of your system. And so most of us don't know how long it takes to get these things out of our system, because there's really no research to tell us how long something really actually takes to get completely out of our system.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Have you come across some good liver detox protocols yourself that you recommend for people like Robert or others?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Silly Marin, the liver, there are a lot of, and the other thing, the sulfur that I heard you advertising, because one of the problems with liver is the sulfur, the glutathione. So you offer a sulfur product. So the things like Silly Marin and the sulfur's products are really important. And of course, you know, you can also add things like broccoli and cauliflower and garlic and those kinds of things to your diet, which have a lot of sulfur, you know, foodstuffs that have a lot of sulfur in them.
Is the Silly Marin, is that part of the whole milk thistle thing, or is that separate?
Right.
Is that
That's part of the milk thistle.
Milk thistle, yeah, that's the kind of the number one go-to thing, huh? Have you ever learned or heard people benefit from doing coffee enemas for liver?
Coffee enemas have been used extensively for cancer treatment, and of course the liver detox is very important for cancer. So, do coffee enemas work? They've worked with a lot of people. How they work, I can't really tell you. I don't know the metabolic process by which it works, but it seems to give a lot of people a lot of benefit.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, what a perfect storm we created with the toxins and the electromagnetic fields. And I guess we don't really know all of the effects, do we, with cell phone towers, 5G and smart meters? I mean, are they just lowering the energy in the cells in the body? Is what's going on?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to change the. Well, remember we talked about the cell. A healthy cell has its own electromagnetic frequencies.
Right.
And think of it like a piano. When a piano is in tune, and you strike a piano, and you know it starts the piano starts vibrating. If the piano is in tune, it sounds beautiful. But what happens if you give a wrong frequency, a piano is out of tune? And that's the same thing with our cells. If we start putting into our cells these frequencies, which are dissonant, it's going to disrupt the way the cells are, the molecules are communicating with each other.
Yeah.
And so how that's going to play out, it's a great experiment, which is being done to the human species right now. because the research, because there, you know, there is some research being done, but mostly they haven't done enough research to say exactly how this is going to play out. And they're putting these towers up by saying, oh, it's not going to be a problem. But how do they know it's not going to be a problem if they haven't done the research?
I've seen it. I think out in California, they're putting 5Gs, what, every couple blocks or something?
Doing it in Ohio also.
Really? Well, I'm going to check out that organization you told me about. A couple more things, then we'll let you go. When you talk about nutrients, your experience, with all your experience over many years, do you think it's possible to get the nutrients we need from pills and liquid vitamin, whatever, the best out there, whatever, you know, vitamins, minerals, supplementation rather than the food itself?
I think our first nutrient should always be our food.
Yeah.
And water.
Yeah.
So the first thing we need to do is make sure that, you know, getting clean water is getting harder and harder. Getting clean, pure water, and drinking enough of it. Because one of the big problems with people, you know, when they come into the emergency room, everybody's dehydrated. So dehydration is a very major problem. And almost everyone who has a chronic disease is dehydrated. So getting enough water is crucial. And then the nutrients we should try to get with our balanced diet. I mean, I just came back to the United States and I was around people and I'm just watching people go out to these fast food restaurants. They're not cooking at home. If they're cooking at home, they're eating prepared food. They're not eating very many fruits and vegetables. And I'm just watching how people eat. And it's just like, it breaks my heart. And you can't say anything because they, you know, they get offended. And so I think there's not a really good consciousness, a food consciousness, that is existing right now. And it's kind of sad to watch.
Yes. So food first, but I guess
food first and then the nutrients. And then, you know, after you do the food, and if you, you know, for example, if you have some kind of issue, some kind of medical issue, clearly the food is not enough. For example, you know, let's look at cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. and people are having heart attacks and people are having constricted coronaries. You know, the research has shown that people are vitamin C deficient. And one of the problems that we, in Western medicine, we only look at vitamin deficiencies, like if there's something like pellagra or scurvy or you know, it's so out of whack that there's an acute problem. But we can have these chronic low-grade vitamin deficiencies, and that's part of the chronic disease syndrome, that, you know, we might have a chronic, almost everybody who has cancer has a vitamin D deficiency. Mm. Almost everybody who has cancer may have a selenium deficiency. Almost everybody who has cancer, you know, may have a chronic vitamin C deficiency, and certainly heart disease is a chronic vitamin C deficiency. So one of the things that we don't look at and we don't test in Western medicine are these low-grade chronic vitamin deficiencies. And some of them are not low-grade. For example, the vitamin D deficiency is indeed an epidemic in the United States at this time.
Are there actually tests people could do?
Yeah, vitamin D. Finally, the
vitamin D tests you can do.
Yeah,
right?
Finally, you know, and the number, you know, many people, especially people with chronic disease, their vitamin D level is generally around 10, and they say it should be, around 40, but really 60 is a better number. So but it's a test that your doctor is not going to do if you don't ask for it. Very few doctors are doing it spontaneously.
We don't make our own vitamin C, right? Correct? Humans don't?
That's right. Humans don't make their own vitamin C.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we got to get that in the food or supplement.
Yeah. The Empower movement, it's Empower movement.com.
Okay.
And it will talk to you about the mass action of liability.
on this whole contract thing, which is very interesting.
The contract thing, yeah. So if you could get someone from that group to come on your show, it would be very beneficial.
Yeah. You know, we have our money guy on every Wednesday, and he's taught us a lot about all these just different adhesion contracts that we get involved in and don't know it.
Well, the reason I like this group is because this is something, you know, because a lot of us are feeling helpless and we're feeling put upon and we don't know what to do. And the reason I like this is because it actually is something that is doable, that the people who are making these decisions understand it and they understand their liability. And they're keeping this information from us because if we are able to fight back in the system in this way, then they know that they are going to be liable for a lot of money. And the one thing they understand is money.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is coming down the pike before we go? So we have the GMO thing and the EMF thing. That's huge, right? And toxins.
I was in America. I just came back from America. If people don't wake up, they're going to get crushed. Just as simple as that. If they don't wake up and they don't wake up soon, they're going to get crushed. You know, and this is this mass action liability is one way of fighting back. But you have to have some awareness. You have to have a critical mass of people who have an awareness. And who, you know, like some of the questions I'm getting today is silliness. You know, if you're going to be that silly, and if you're not going to come out of your paradigm, your comfort zone, because we're in a time of great transition, and the transition can go one way or the other, mm-hmm. and it's up to us. You know, if the transition goes the way the globalists want it, you're going to get crushed. If you start waking up and saying, I'm not a victim, I'm not a slave, I'm not, you know, someone who is going to just sit back and take this, and I have ways of resisting this nonsense, then I'm going to take action in order to preserve myself. And if you want a future, if you have children, and if you want to protect your future, and you're not willing to fight for your future, then, and this may be harsh, maybe you don't deserve a future. So you better say to yourself, do I love my children? Do I love my grandchildren? Do I want to have a future? If you want to have a future and you want to have a future in which your children and your grandchildren and their children can live in some kind of peace and harmony, then this is the turning point. You better make a decision now what you want to do.
Yeah. Well, we'll end it right there. Thank you very much. Dr. Banks, we appreciate your work. Now, your website is, let's see, what is it? NancyBanksMD.com, right? NancyBanksMD.com. Are both your books, the AIDS book and the cancer book, on Amazon?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I think they're in downloadable forms also.
Oh, great.
You know, ebook form.
Well, it's an honor having you on the show. We appreciate it. Thanks. We had a good time.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Patrick. Thank you very much.
You take care of yourself, okay?
Okay, bye-bye. Oh,
bye. Wow. Yeah. Well, nothing to say after that except, well, I'll see you tomorrow.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.